I'm Dr. Leif Tapanilla from the Idaho Museum of Natural History, and I'm here with Peter Pruitt from Zoo Idaho, and this is The Nature of Idaho. Coming to you from the 1B, Bannock County that is, we're talking all about Idaho, its wild places and wild faces, the natural setting that makes Idaho an incredible place to live and be proud of. Our guest today is Brandon Peacock. He's an assistant professor of biology at Idaho State University and curator of earth science at the Idaho Museum of Natural History. We're talking today about fossils of the last ice age in Idaho on a hot day like today. Can't imagine it being cold, but Peter, ice was here.
Ice was here. And honestly, it's so cool when you look at the mega with the mammals. It's insane how...
We had some big beasties. We're going to talk about them. We'll try to get you thinking a little bit about how our part of Idaho was a lot different when mountain glaciers were here and slightly different looking vegetation and some animals that maybe you're familiar with and maybe you're not familiar with.
It's going to help us really understand our present day mammals as well here in Idaho, because we got some really cool critters, unique in some sense compared to the rest of the world.
Well, we'll dig into that. But first, I understand you brought some nature news.
Right. This isn't necessarily our typical nature in the news, Leif, but I think it's important anyway. So have you ever seen those death toll messages on the interstate?
Yeah, you know? The interstate.
Yeah.
Big sign.
Yeah. That says 14,000 people have died in Idaho this year, be safe on the road.
Yeah, I'm sure that gets people driving more safely and taking care, and it works, right?
Totally. You know, and we know this because we've got some research coming from the University of Toronto and the University of Minnesota. They were actually looking at these messages in Texas. And what they found out, for Texas at least, that these messages actually led to more crashes.
Yeah, more crashes.
More
because...
crashes.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. And some extra deaths. So in Texas, these messages get displayed once a week each month. And so it was a perfect kind of study opportunity for these researchers. And what they found is that there were more crashes during the week with the fatality messaging compared to the weeks without. The displaying a fatality message increased the number of crashes over the 10-kilometer period following the messages. For those of you who aren't used to kilometers, that's about 6 miles. You know, so people were crashing 6 miles
more frequently after getting that message. Wow.
After getting that message, yep. And these accidents is comparable to raising the speed limit 3 to 5 miles per hour. You know, the faster you go, you tend to be less safe. And then their findings also suggest that the fatality messages can cause an additional 2,600 crashes and 16 deaths per year in Texas, costing the state $377 million.
Well, it seems like there's an easy solution to this problem.
Mm-hmm.
What's that?
Not have the messages. what they were saying
is— That's so counterintuitive.
I know, but what they were talking about too is that when you see these messages, especially if the fatality number is high, it adds an extra cognitive load or burden on the driver.
Sure.
So they start thinking about, oh my gosh, this is dangerous and I'm going to die. And then
I don't want to get in a crash.
I don't want to get in a crash.
And then you crash.
And then they crash. Yeah.
Again, the solution is kind of simple. Maybe have a positive message.
Right. Be happy when you drive. So, or listen to The Nature of Idaho on podcast while you drive.
There you go. Texans should adopt this podcast and
totally.
Radio show. We've got a new market. Trivia time. Question for today is dealing with the Ice Age here in Idaho. Where is the oldest saber-toothed cat in North America found? You will be amazed, I promise that. When we come back from the break, Dr. Brandon Peacock joins us to talk about Ice Age giants and so much more. Stay tuned.
This is Sari, a student in the Nutrition and Dietetics program at Idaho State University. Here is a healthy nutrition tip for you. Are you busy with school, working, and trying to have a social life? Have you heard of meal prep but are not sure where to start? If this describes you, listen closely. Meal prep can be as simple as preparing several containers with a protein, carbohydrate, and fat in each at the beginning of the week. My go-to protein options are chicken thighs, black beans, beef, and fish. For carb sources, rice or potatoes are the way to go as they are healthy, cheap, and easy to make. Add some fruit or veggies to make your meal prep more nutritious. Minimize the stress in your life by committing to 1 hour of cooking a week. I promise that you'll be glad that you did.
Hey, welcome back from the break. I want to welcome our guest today, Dr. Brandon Peacock. He's an assistant professor of biology at ISU, and he's also curator of earth sciences at the Idaho Museum of Natural History. Thank you for joining us today on The Nature of Idaho.
I'm very happy to be here.
Well, wonderful. Tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do.
I am the science curator at the IMNH, but I am a paleontologist, a vertebrate paleontologist, so fossils of animals that have backbones. And most of my research time before I came to Idaho was on two periods in Earth history called the Permian and the Triassic. So the origins is about 250 million years ago. The origins of things like dinosaurs, the origins of things like mammals and crocodiles and turtles, these all evolved back then. And right in the middle of those two periods is the biggest mass extinction event in all of Earth history, which is an extremely cool thing to study because we can look to the fossil record to understand mass extinctions. When the ecosystems are disrupted, what happens? Mass extinctions let us learn a lot about that. But since becoming a curator here in Idaho, I've gotten very familiar with Idaho's fossil record, and Idaho does have a lot to say, actually, about some of those things hundreds of millions of years ago. But in fact, many of Idaho's fossils are from much more recent time that we all would call the Ice Age.
Yeah, so these Ice Age fossils are a whole lot younger. What's the general time period that we're talking about?
Well, it's funny, right? So I would say they're terribly ridiculously young. But the fossils that are the most abundant in Idaho that we're probably going to talk about today are all like just about around 100,000 years old. And so that might sound terribly old. 100,000 years ago might sound very old. But there have been people, anatomically modern humans, just like us, that were in Africa at the time, but for almost 300,000 years. So this isn't even like before there were humans. This is a time when, not in Idaho, but in other parts of the world, human beings like us were walking around. So to me, that's real recent.
Tell us a little bit about the Ice Age and kind of what was going on in Idaho at that time.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think a lot of people, when they think of the Ice Age, certainly when I teach about the Ice Age, a lot of students, their idea is that it's like, you know, terrible winds and, you know, it's icy and cold and frigid everywhere. And that's just not true. So starting a little over 2.5 million years ago, based on how the Earth's orbit works, nothing to do with like, you know, carbon dioxide in the air or anything, snow and ice started to accumulate in the northern hemisphere in places like Greenland and then in Canada and Alaska and Siberia. And when enough snow and ice accumulates and grows and every year doesn't quite melt, you get these giant ice sheets. And so these ice sheets travel down from the North Pole on the northern continents and on mountains all over the world. Everywhere you have mountains, there were ice like this. And this ice came and went and came and went. And what we call the Ice Age is just when conditions are right on the surface of our planet for that ice to exist at all. Right now, currently, while we are talking, we are in the Ice Age still. We have never left the Ice Age. All of human civilization is within the quote-unquote Ice Age. You might not think it's very cold right now. Certainly, it's not very cold today. Right now, we're in one of these periods that's called an interglacial period. So over 40 times in the last 2.5 million years, the ice has come down and melted back and come down and melted back. And all that also has to do with the orbit of the Earth. And so there are times in Earth's history when there would have been a big wall of ice up at Arco and you couldn't go to Salmon or Stanley. That was all totally icy. But other times during the Ice Age, it looked just like it does today. And funnily enough, a lot of the really excellent fossils we have from the quote-unquote Ice Age of Idaho are from one of the periods that looked a lot like today, an interglacial period. So if you got in your time machine and you went to, out to Blackfoot or something, it's going to look like Blackfoot kind of looks like today, sagebrush and stuff. There's just going to be a lot of really big animals there that you're not expecting.
Big animals that you're not expecting. Let's talk about some of the cast characters that aren't with us today, but would have been walking along the plains or in the valleys here in eastern Idaho.
Yeah, it's funny. So, certainly the last few 100,000 years, there's a lot of really fantastic and charismatic organisms that a lot of people have sort of in their mind as the symbols of the megafauna. And of course, I think everyone's first stop is the mammoth. And so yes, Idaho did have mammoths. We had a species of mammoth called the Columbian mammoth. So our mammoth almost certainly was like a big gray elephant. So not a shaggy woolly mammoth. We do not have woolly mammoths, especially down here in southern Idaho. We had these Columbian mammoths. They would have looked like giant elephants. Not so much bigger in mass than like an elephant in Africa today, but like much taller. They're like, the bulls are like 14 feet at the shoulder, and some of the tusks are like 16 feet long. The tusks on these Columbian mammoths can be huge. And so a big gray elephant out there on the sagebrush.
I worked with elephants in my career, and you're standing next to a big bull Asian elephant that might be 8 feet at the shoulders.
Right.
He's pretty darn intimidating.
Yeah.
Not 13 feet.
Yeah, right. Oh my gosh, it's so crazy. And so, I mean, so there's mammoths, there's mastodons, which look a whole lot like elephants. Those probably were kind of shaggy and brown, but they're actually a totally different kind of organism. They're related to elephants, of course. They have the trunk and the tusks, but they are a different kind of elephant thing. You have the giant sloths. I think everyone kind of stops at the giant sloths. So Idaho had at least two kinds of these sloths. One is about 8 or 9 feet tall. One's about 6 feet tall. So walking around on the Snake River Plain, you would have had two kinds of giant sloth. Got the bison, which kind of look like our bison of today, except the ones we're talking about had these tremendous horns, almost 8 feet across of their head span. So sort of what you know, but sort of a little too big for you. I think another few animals that I think are sort of a surprise to people. So we had like a llama species walking around here. We had a horse, and it's a totally extinct kind of horse. But if you would have seen it, you'd say it's just a horse. You're probably right. We had a peccary, so something like a javelina. If you know a javelina, kind of like a pig relative, we had one of those running around. I feel like I'm forgetting another big plant eater.
Do we have any woolly rhinos?
No rhinos. Great question. And so this is what I mean when I say people have an idea of the Ice Age in their heads. Rhinos, especially woolly rhinos, and there's actually a handful of different kinds of rhinoceroses that are Ice Age rhinoceroses. And those are all Asia and Africa and Europe. So funnily enough, during the Ice Age, a lot of the ways these animals move back and forth is between Alaska and Siberia. And so if you imagine when there's so much ice on Canada, in fact, during the times when there's a glacial period, there's more ice on Canada than there's ice on Antarctica right now. So you have to imagine all the ice that's now in Antarctica being more than that being on Canada. And so if you have that much ice on the land, where's that water coming from? It's coming from the oceans. So the oceans are much lower. And so there's a lot of places that you can walk between that you, of course, can't walk now. And so all that is to say, rhinoceroses have been found in the far, 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 far northeast of Asia. And everybody's waiting for eventually somebody in Alaska to find the one rhino that wandered into North America. It's funny because tens of millions of years ago, rhinos totally evolved right here in North America. But we don't have any in the Ice Age. All our rhinos go away about 3-4 million years ago.
We have large bear as well.
Humongo bear, yes. So definitely the short-faced bear, Arctotis, is a really big, pretty scary animal, definitely a pursuit predator. But it's funny because it's so huge, but it's also truly a bear, so a bit of an omnivore. Not only meat, but there are some pretty horrifying meat eaters on the landscape.
And I'm going to tell you right now, though, when I come to the museum and I see the short-faced bear skeleton.
Oh, yeah, the mounted.
Immediately, I'm going to go, Humongo bear.
That's it. It's huge.
Oh, it's really, it's hands.
It's like, yeah, right.
Yes. Yeah.
Can palm your rib cage.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we also have like a whole coterie of cats. So I think everybody thinks of, if they're not thinking of a sloth or a mammoth, when they think of the Ice Age, they're thinking of a big saber-toothed cat. And so there's a lineage of saber-toothed cat that has particularly huge saber teeth. And that's only in the Americas. And that's this animal called Smilodon. So we've now done, the cast of the movie Ice Age. We've talked about mammoth sloths and now the saber-toothed cat. And so here in Idaho, we absolutely had that saber-toothed cat, the North American one. There's a species from South America that's actually like way bigger, but we had that saber-toothed cat. We also had another saber-toothed cat. It's called Homotherium, that was a rarer on the landscape, had like kind of shorter sabers. It's sometimes called the scimitar-toothed cat. This was one that was living all over the world, including Idaho. I think my favorite of the predators, kind of by a lot, is the lion. And so I say that to people, and because people think the saber-toothed cat, saber-toothed tiger they call it, which it's not a tiger. Saber-toothed cat is what they think of. But we had a straight-up, real, honest-to-goodness lion, and that is easily the biggest of the cats. The saber-toothed cat is not as big as the lion. The American lion, Panthera atrox is its name, lived all over North America, and we have plenty of them here from Idaho. And so I always think it's a little unnerving to imagine walking around in the City Creek trails and knowing there's like a pride that's like sleeping in up one of the draws, you know, for the night.
Size comparison. I mean, how much bigger was it than the African lion that we think
they
of
are pretty comparable? I think. I think a little bit bulkier, a little bit more massive. Some of the bones are pretty robust. So like of the big cats today, like tigers and jaguars and lions, jaguars are like kind of the beefiest. And so the American lion, in part because of geography, right? It's in the Americas, just like a jaguar. People have compared it to the jaguar, wondered if the jaguar is its closest relative. But amazingly, we can get DNA out of these fossil bones. And we know that the American lion is not closely related to the jaguar. as much as it is to the lions that are today in India and Africa. So what we don't know is if they had manes or anything like that. We don't know that, right? All we have is their bones. There is a cave painting of the American lion from South America, from when the first peoples of the Americas would have encountered it. That's how not very old it is. And that painting is very intriguing because it has them as red. It's like a tawny, rusty color, which is really exciting to think about, but we don't know.
Well, thinking about big cats on our landscape.
Yes.
You know, I think most of us have heard of this idea of modern antelope, or the pronghorn,
pronghorn
on our landscape.
Absolutely.
As being the fastest animal on land today in our area, and that they're supercharged fast compared to any predator.
Yeah.
Were there predators in the past that might have given them a run for their money?
That's a great question. So, I mean, I remember being a kid and you read like, you know, who's the fastest, who's the smartest, who's the tallest, whatever, those kind of books. And
right.
It's always like the cheetah's the fastest and the pronghorn is the second fastest. But one lives in Africa and Asia and one lives in North America. And you're like, that's weird. And so it's true that in the fossil record, we have a now extinct cat called the American cheetah. It is almost certainly a relative of the cougars, the mountain lions we have here today, that was like a pursuit predator. So our pronghorn that we have today are still just as fast probably as they've always been, but now there's nobody chasing them. They can easily run away from wolves and bears and normal mountain lions. And they probably had a predator, this cheetah, the American cheetah, that chased them down. That animal is quite rare. I don't think we have any fossils of it from Idaho, but there are a lot of fossils of it from other parts of the world, other parts of the country, Nevada. And actually just last year, an incredible, like complete specimen of the American cheetah was found in North Carolina. That's just spectacular.
Let's talk about where a lot of these fossils are coming from. Certainly when speaking about East Idaho.
Yes.
And American Falls Reservoir.
Yeah.
To me, it's one of the amazing, almost secret places where almost all of the fossils from this part of the world tell us and teach us so much about the Ice Age.
It's a secret unless you're a paleontologist or you just live in American Falls.
Well, or if you live, if you listen to our radio program, the secret is now out.
Well, it's out. Okay, so
everyone in Texas will be coming up to American Falls now.
I know.
If they can survive the drive.
Tell us a little bit about American Falls Reservoir and why it's such a cool spot for fossils.
Yeah, so I mean the Snake River running sort of in that smiley face pattern across southern Idaho is I don't even know the answer to this. You might know as a geologist, but I know it's quite old. It's millions of years of time.
That's right. Yeah, it goes way back. And the snake has been running that course for millennia, right?
And so you can think of in the past, so the Ice Age is only 2.5 million years, like I said, and the fossils we're talking about here today are about 100,000, and then up until the present or so, just, you know, 11 or 12,000 years ago. The river was the river. You know, if you're out on the Snake River Plain, you got to go to the river to drink. This was just a place where there was water. And so fossils, by their very nature, are only created when animals' bodies are buried very quickly after death, or plants is buried quickly after death. And then they can be preserved. Most things die on the landscape and are eaten and degrade and decompose, and that's the end of it. And so the river is just one of these processes out on the landscape that can move sand and mud around and quickly bury animals. The dam that's on the river today to make the American Falls Reservoir is, you know, quite new. It's 100 years old. But there are times in the past when natural processes, landslides, volcanic eruptions have like dammed parts of the Snake River and created what are effectively reservoirs. Basically, we would say lakes that existed for a time and animals died on those margins just like they would anywhere else. And those sediments are just happen to be exposed right now because of where the snake is. So many of our fossils come from the shores of the river or the shores of the reservoir. Every year when the reservoir goes up and down, it erodes some rock and we find some animals falling out. But what I think it's important to remember is the snake wanders all over the landscape. And so people who have potato cellars 20 miles from the river, if they dig down 20 feet, they might hit a sloth. They might hit a camel. And so those sediments are everywhere. So I always tell people if you're driving from Blackfoot to Arco at 80 in your cruise control, if you dug down 15 feet while you were doing that, I guarantee you there's these animals, fossils.
Right.
They're not being exposed. They're underground.
Yeah, and because we have that reservoir today and it's managed, we'll talk about the Bureau of Reclamation.
That's right.
They manage it for irrigation purposes.
Absolutely.
The water's going up, goes down, goes up, goes down.
Yep.
And that creates a process of erosion that can expose these relatively young,
very young
rocks and fossils that can.
So if I'm doing the work that I do on much older rocks, hundreds of millions of years, I mean, you say the fossils are in the rock, and so you have to chisel out your Tyrannosaurus rex. You have to chisel out your like first mammal. A lot of these bones around the reservoir, like you said, are very young. So, I mean, we basically, they're in the sand. You just reach in and you pick it up and you have an elephant arm bone. You know, I mean, it just comes right out. You don't have to do too much. Might have to glue it, but.
Well, so some of the cool new research that's been coming out on the fossils that have been coming out of the reservoir, we've been at the museum collecting these for 80 plus years.
Yes, absolutely.
Some of them collected over 80 years ago, and those fossils now are being treated to modern techniques of
tons
paleontology.
Of techniques. Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about the direwolf. We haven't spoken of that.
Yeah, the direwolf's a pretty amazing thing. So that's another one of the predators on the landscape. So people might know direwolves. Everyone knows the Starks and Game of Thrones and all that. So direwolves are a real thing. They are kind of like a beefy version of the gray wolf that you know, but they're a completely different organism. They are not actually very close relatives of gray wolves. And we know that because, in part, from Idaho specimens, we've gotten DNA out of these bones. So a lot of people think about fossils and DNA and, you know, Jurassic Park and dino DNA. Can we dig up a mosquito and clone a T-Rex? And the answer to that is like, no. That's not possible.
Oh, thank
but,
you.
But, oh, I disagree. I would prefer we could.
Kept me up all night, every night.
Oh, boy. But the thing is that there are chunks of DNA. There are bits and pieces of DNA in these bones that are on the order of hundreds of thousands of years old. We can now get a lot of DNA from there. And so DNA from direwolves from Idaho is what helped us see that, like, though they look a lot like the gray wolves of today, genetically, they are nowhere near the gray wolves of today. Direwolves are part of an American lineage of dogs that have been here for like 5 million years at least, whereas gray wolves came over 250,000 years ago. I know these are big numbers, but came over from Asia 250,000 years ago. So there would have been gray wolves and direwolves on the landscape at the same time, but they are not related to each other in any real special way. They're not interbreeding, certainly. And that's an incredible thing to be able to know, because we have to get DNA out of these bones. And that's something we've only been able to do for a couple of years.
Well, and it's opened up like a whole new
completely,
way of asking questions and answering
questions.
It completely
changes like the kinds of questions you're even able to ask. I mean, I think the other thing you said, how old these specimens have been in terms of like in the care of the Idaho Museum of Natural History. So not even just how old they are as objects, but how long they've been specimens in a museum. The direwolf especially is a really wonderful example. It was collected by a person in Idaho and then glued and protected and put into the museum before Rosalind Franklin and Watson and Crick and all them even had the structure of DNA figured out. So this specimen's been safe in a museum from before humans knew what DNA was, and now, all these years later, we can actually pull DNA out of it. That's like one of the reasons museums exist at all, is to keep a collection for posterity. You couldn't have known that this direwolf skull would yield so much DNA before anybody knew what DNA was.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
Like, that's incredible. That's one of the reasons we keep collections in the basements and attics of museums, is for new processes that show up.
What about mastodon?
Mastodon's kind of the other one that's like really fun right now. I'm getting involved in some research of people who've been sampling, trying to get the genomes of mastodons from all over North America. And so this is something, again, that paleontologists couldn't even think of. I mean, a mastodon in Florida, a mastodon in California, they still are just the same species. They're the American mastodon. Done. Okay, we know what we know. But we can get their DNA out from the bones. We can start to ask questions about like their population structure, how they migrate, who's really related to who. And so this is a little bit of like ahead of publication news, but I can share it with you guys. One thing that's really, really cool is we're finding that the mastodons in Idaho, their closest actual relatives are the mastodons that are living up in Alaska and Russia and across that like land bridge that would exist. And so remember, in the ice age, the ice comes and goes and comes and goes. And when the ice comes and you can cross back and forth, it's very cold and the animals are pushed farther south. But when it melts, you can go back north again. And just like you might expect, given how we are related to like the Rocky Mountains and things like that, the Idaho mastodons are part of the group of animals that's going up and coming down. Whereas mastodons in California, Florida, Michigan, they're just hanging out in the warmth. They don't bother tracking the ice. It's really cool that we can know that now. We can see the populations of these animals across the continent behaving completely differently. It's truly unbelievable we can figure that out.
We weren't around back then.
Right.
And so we've had to try to, with our best information available, tell a story about the Ice Age.
Yes.
And very clearly, our story on the Ice Age is changing and evolving as technology changes.
Absolutely.
And evolves.
Oh, as we learn more, right? I mean, that's what science is all about, is what you read in the textbook is absolutely, hopefully, the best as we knew it on that year it was written. But 10 years later, you might want to check back in. Mm-hmm. Probably not going to be wrong, but could be refined, could be, you know, there's a whole new avenues that we can pursue. Yeah.
So bison latifrons, the long horn bison, giant, you know, rack of horn on it.
With the 8-foot horn span.
It's amazing, right?
Yeah.
So what are we finding out about bison latifrons?
Yeah, the bison work is really interesting. There's not Idaho specimens involved, so I'm not following it all that closely, although the Idaho Museum of Natural History does have an incredible collection of these gigantic bison. Well, we're just finding that there's many different species of bison that existed across Asia and, well, Eurasia, I should say, and into North America. And that especially the ones in the Americas, bison is the genus name, and then the big one's called latifrons. That's the species, just like we're Homo sapiens. And these are named species because we can recognize their horns as different shapes, different sizes. But it turns out that they're very much mixed in with each other. They can breed with each other. And they exist at slightly different times. One of the things we're also able to do now is really accurately date things in a way that wasn't, we couldn't be quite as accurate as we can be now. So we know that, like, oh, these two never lived together. One follows the other. So they evolved probably into each other. You don't have an extinction of this one and a new species of this one. It's the same lineage of organism that we would call a bison, but for some reason there's a change in their horn shape or where they're living, that kind of thing. And we can know that now because we can look at their genetic data and see that, like, oh yeah, no matter what your horn shape, here's the tree of life of these bison, and they're kind of a smear of different shapes and sizes. So bison latifrons is absolutely a real thing, but it might be actually ancestral to the bison of today, at least in part, which is really cool because it's a bigger animal, much bigger animal with a huge horns. But for some reason, evolution, right? By natural selection, you're going to just like disfavor those horns for a while. And now they don't have horns so big, which is really weird. And again, something we can only know from this recent DNA work.
That's great. And again, animals that are found right here at American Falls Reservoir, just, you know, a large lake within the Snake River system.
Right.
And can we speak a little bit about the reservoir itself is a managed body of water by the Bureau of Reclamation. And so that land of where the reservoir is and when the water goes down low, the shorelines are still on federal property. And I think this is a real important – this is the PSA segment.
Yes, that's right. We have to – if we're going to talk about this, we have people to know that certainly if you're on any of the BOR-managed part of the reservoir, so the Bureau of Reclamation part of the reservoir, that these are federal fossils. They are part of the American People's Public Trust. There is a Bureau of Reclamation facility on the north side of the dam that you can absolutely report finds to. So if you're ATVing with your family and you find a mammoth, go ahead and tell the BOR people down at the dam. They want to know. They'll come find it. They'll probably call me. But yeah, don't pick it up. Don't take it home. The other thing that's important to say is at least on the southeastern part of the reservoir, that is the Fort Hall Reservation. So it's not quite managed by the BOR. The tribe does manage that part of it. So Rainbow Beach, places like that. That's right. Tribal, so don't take stuff from there either.
Right. It's really important, you know, as I think has come out in our conversation, that the value of these fossils is really to be in the public trust.
Absolutely.
These are, you know, America's fossils. Mm-hmm. And to have them, you know, reside in a museum where they're taken care of for as long as is possible so that they're available for display to the public and available to research to gain new knowledge as you're saying, new techniques come along. Yeah. Who'd a thunk?
You know, it's hard to, I mean, what in theory, that same dire wolf is going to be safe in the museum in 2223, in 2448. These are weird times to think about, but that is the idea. And so we don't know what's going to be possible then.
Right. And so we're asking our public to, you know, be good stewards as well of fossils when they see them in the field, of animal fossils. Leave them be. Let somebody know. And a professional know. And,
absolutely.
And then
don't put them in your truck. Don't take them.
But when you come out to a museum like ours, the Idaho Museum of Natural History, you can see the benefits of those collections and learn.
Absolutely. The history of Idaho. I mean, you can see it in our exhibits. And I mean, if you become a member, you can come behind the scenes sometimes and see all the millions of objects we have downstairs and upstairs and all around where we keep these things.
We started the show with a question about the oldest saber-toothed cat in North America and where it was found. Could you help us with that, Brandon?
Yes, the oldest saber-toothed cat from North America. These animals evolved over in Eurasia. is from Idaho.
Really? How old
is it? Clap, 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 clap. It is just over between 7 and 9 million, but I think it's pretty much 7 million years ago. And fossils of the organism are known actually from Eastern Oregon as well, but we have from Owyhee County, so this is southwestern Idaho, a nice specimen that has a lot of the lower jaw, some teeth from the upper jaw, as well as the arm bone. And so it's a fragmentary specimen, but the teeth are what really helped the scientists who studied it identify it as one of the earliest saber-toothed cats, and in fact, the oldest one from North America. It's about 7 million years old, and it is from Idaho, southwest Idaho. So actually not the Ice Age at all. Idaho was very different 7 million years ago than 100,000 years ago, but still.
That's really cool. And so, you know, chalk it up to the list of major animal groups that have a early history here in Idaho.
Yeah, absolutely.
The cats, the camels.
Yeah, yeah. Though there's a lot. I mean, a lot of people are surprised. Yeah, camels evolved in North America. Dogs evolved in North America. Rhinos evolved in North America. And especially for camels and rhinos, everyone's like, what? Because they don't live here anymore. But they used to. Most of them all did live here. Yeah.
That is awesome. And we really want to thank Brandon for joining us today. And to learn more about Idaho's fossil history, please go visit the IMNH, that is the Idaho Museum of Natural History, on the ISU campus here in Pocatello, or connect through Facebook and Twitter.
The Nature of Idaho is recorded at the KISU studios on the ISU campus in Pocatello. Production is by Avery Frazier and Jamin Anderson. Send feedback to noidkisu@isu.edu. Weekly episodes can be found at kisu.org or wherever you get your podcasts.